Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
All right, welcome back to episode number 123 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, you're back in the States. How was El Salvador the rest of the trip?
Yeah, it was great. I think we left off where I had not been to El Zante yet, and I was kind of frustrated or surprised by the lack of Bitcoin adoption. It was like a very light Bitcoin adoption across different stores and things outside of El Zante. Well, the last few days of the trip were in El Zante, and it was night and day difference. We had an Airbnb on the water. It was really cool. The caretaker like made breakfast, and she was like a licensed masseuse and stuff. So we paid for massages at the Airbnb and Bitcoin on the Lightning Network. We bought dinner on the Lightning Network. We bought lunch on the Lightning Network. My 6-year-old daughter used the Lightning Network to buy like drinks when we were taking a break from the beach. So yeah, it was what I expect. It was more than what I expected from the rest of the trip. It was almost entirely Bitcoin. I think we only had a couple things that we used US dollars for while we were in El Zante. So that part was cool. It was definitely like worth the trip, buying souvenirs in Bitcoin on the Lightning Network. And then I went to the Bitcoin hardware store and bought a seed signer and some kind of souvenir things all on the Lightning Network, and talked to them. There's another guy in there, another Bitcoin guy in there. So we kind of had a little Bitcoin conversation. So yeah, El Zante was like a leap into the future, right? Like the rest of El Salvador was kind of like where we would be maybe in a few years, where some people kind of volunteer themselves to opt in into transacting in Bitcoin and accept Bitcoin, in their store. But El Zante is more like near full adoption. You could get around with just your cell phone and Bitcoin. So yeah, it was cool. I'm super glad we did that and went there. And that whole town was real chill. It's got that surf town vibe. So everybody's friendly. I had a great time.
And how was the prices on everything? I mean, was it tourist pricing or was it pretty reasonable?
So El Zante is like the more expensive place to be in El Salvador, but we would eat lunch or dinner on like a beachfront restaurant, and the prices would be like a chain sit-down restaurant in the States. Like the first place we went was called Esencia Nativa, and they had like this giant bowl of seafood soup with huge shrimp and different chunks of fish and like in a cream soup. And I think it was like $16, and it was more food than you can get for $16 in the United States in a place. So, and that's on the water. And I mean, it's the same thing. We ate at a couple of different spots where you could sit and watch the beach. Beers are $3.50 while you're sitting in the shade, like basically up against the seawall. I mean, one restaurant we ate at high tide, the waves would crack against the seawall and come into the restaurant onto the tables that are next to the ocean. And same thing. I mean, I think you could have ordered an entree that was more than $20, but the lunch stuff, sandwiches, I think I had like 4 fish tacos and a drink for $16-17. Like when you're that close to the beach, normally everything's pretty jacked up on prices, and beers aren't $3,
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, cool. Well, maybe I'll take a trip down there one of these days, follow your lead and hit some of the same places. But while you're gone, holy cow, there's been a ton of stuff that I feel like has happened. So a lot to cover today, and we'll see how much of it is positive and negative or just kind of news out there. So the big thing to start with, though, Robinhood is planning to acquire Bitstamp, right? So $200 million closing in the first half of 2025. To me, this is huge news. I mean, this puts Robinhood on the same playing field as Coinbase and Kraken. Bitstamp is, I think, the largest running exchange since like 2013, I don't know, something early on in the crypto world. I think they're in like 85 something countries at this point. I mean, they have everything that Robinhood would need to expand to the rest of the world, and they're doing it for a couple $100 million.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised to see that, and I was surprised to see it was only 200 million. I feel like that's a steal. But this is kind of the first traditional finance player to jump in and have the we sell stocks, bonds, and ETFs kind of thing on one hand, and we sell crypto and Bitcoin on the other side of the house. You know, I think Robinhood kind of got slapped for doing for selling some crypto and all that. So I'd imagine they're like, all right, well, we're going to do it. We're just going to do it with this half of the house. And I would assume it's going to be under like a different doing business as or a different entity or whatever to keep things separate. But this is why we talk about the SEC not making good decisions. The industry is going to continue. The innovation in the crypto stuff is going to keep moving. And if they don't regulate things properly, then the Robinhoods of the world are going to figure out ways to do what they want to do to capture some of this and provide their customers with what they want. And so, yeah, man, if you can go to Robinhood and you can buy stocks and you can manage your 401k and you can buy and sell crypto, but if you have Schwab, you can't do anything in crypto that isn't buying Bitcoin spot ETFs, then that's an advantage for Robinhood. So $200 million well spent if that all works.
Well, this is all too. I mean, Robinhood got a Wells notice from the SEC, right? So that still hasn't been finalized or whatever is going to happen with that. So the SEC still has problems with Robinhood, and Robinhood is pretty much saying, screw you. We're going forward with crypto.
Yeah, you can't wait on the SEC or you'll go out of business.
Yeah. So the other big thing too, I mean, we've talked about shooting a couple of years ago, China theoretically said crypto is illegal. Well, now Bybit is coming out and saying that they are authorizing users, Chinese expats outside of China. And it also sounds like Chinese users inside of China to be able to buy and sell crypto. And I've seen some things saying that China never officially outlawed crypto, which maybe they just outlawed the miners. I don't know how true any of it is, but it is starting to be where Chinese citizens are going to have access to crypto officially again, which is, I mean, a huge market. And China's been, I mean, a lot of Chinese citizens are trying to get out of the Chinese yuan and into other things. So this could be really intriguing. We've talked about the ETFs in Hong Kong that didn't really take off because Chinese citizens weren't allowed to buy them. But now they can actually just go buy Bitcoin here pretty soon.
Yeah, that's not a big surprise, man. Chinese regulations or rules or whatever seem to go back and forth and back and forth. And if Hong Kong has access to Bitcoin, you know that there's wealthy people in China that are going to kind of throw their weight around, and whether they get it through whether they change the channels so that the channels are legal or whether they go through different channels to get it. I think either way, some of that Chinese wealth is going to find its way into Bitcoin and crypto.
Yeah. And then I saw Trump was in the news again. So he had a donor party in San Francisco with a bunch of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs, which is typically they're very blue a lot of times. And he pretty much told them that he was going to be the crypto president, and that's what they should expect. So he is pushing the crypto line as hard as he can and has, I think, a lot of people interested because of how negative Biden has been on crypto here lately.
Yeah, so I listened to the All In podcast, and it sounded like Chamath and David Sachs were the two people that were in the leading group that put that together. And they didn't really mention the fact that, like, is this the first time that a Republican presidential candidate has had a substantial visit to San Francisco? I mean, how long has it been? So I thought that was interesting in general. And they talked, I don't want to advertise for somebody else's podcast, but if you go back and listen to the first 30 minutes of the latest All In podcast, the first 30 minutes is them just talking about how tech entrepreneurs can't be on Team Blue right now because of their negative view on M&A and innovation. And, you know, I mean, the whole industry is based on buying and selling businesses, and interest rates are up, so that's not great for startups. And I mean, it was 30 minutes of those guys talking about how rough it is to imagine another 4 years of the same thing we've gotten the last 4 years. And so, yeah, it's very interesting to hear people talk with a level head about Donald Trump. I feel like for the most part, if they're previously vote blue, you don't get a real analysis of the technicals of why one president candidate should have an opportunity versus another. And you know, those guys, I mean, they like RFK Jr. They like, you know, they have people from all over come onto the podcast and talk. But it's one thing to have people on the podcast and talk and expand your reach. It's another thing to put your resources behind somebody and do, you know, these fundraisers are big events with a lot of money. And so, you know, this is a weird election coming up, and it's getting weirder with, you know, in the last, say, 6 to 8 weeks, Bitcoin and crypto has taken a chunk of the news line on the presidential election. So I like it, right? I mean, the more people talk about Bitcoin, I mean, my neighbor is retired ex-military, and I was walking my dog back and this morning, and he stopped and rolled his window down, and this guy's got to be 75. And was like asking me, oh, I heard your trip to El Salvador was great. We talked about it a little bit. And he's like, well, we need to talk about Bitcoin. I'm always looking to learn about stuff. So you got people thinking about it that haven't thought about it. And the more people kind of talk about it on this main stage like this, the more people are going to stop and roll the window down and talk to people about Bitcoin.
Well, you got some other macro events happening. So from an interest rate perspective, the Bank of Canada just dropped a quarter percentage point last week. And then the European Central Bank followed suit and dropped a quarter percent as well. They're expecting Bank of England, I think, to be the next one. It's kind of pressuring the U.S. to do something. I mean, they've been talking about multiple cuts this year, and we haven't seen one yet. And we're not sure if we're going to see one or what's going to happen. But if we don't, it's going to cause all kinds of problems from a monetary perspective if we're not cutting rates and thinking we're stronger. And yeah, it's just going to be an interesting time for sure, especially with the elections coming up.
Yeah, so I did read about this and put some thought into this, because the European Central Bank cut rates by a quarter percent while inflation was higher than expectations. And I believe Canada was in the same boat. I think their inflation expectations are a little higher, or their inflation is higher than expectations, but they're cutting rates. So, but if you remember, you know, the European Central Bank had negative interest rates while we were kind of at that 0 to 50 basis points. So they always seem to be a little bit favorable to the lower interest rate. But if I'm the Fed in the United States, I think not making any changes is not a bad decision. I think waiting and see how things work out, because our inflation in the United States is still in the high twos and threes. And that's with the fake numbers where they carved out all the highest inflation components of the CPI calculation. So if I'm the United States, I wouldn't let Canada and Europe push me around. I think not raising rates and not lowering rates is a decision. If the government learned anything through COVID, maybe do less is not a bad strategy. So that being said, normally when I think something is a good idea, the government does something completely different. So, you know, maybe you expect them to cut rates, but we'll see. I mean, I wouldn't do what Europe does. And I wouldn't do what Canada does. Neither one of them seem to be great stewards of taxpayer dollars.
Well, I think a lot of what I was reading was doing it so close to an election, when what somebody is saying is one thing and what's really happening is the other, is kind of political suicide. So don't expect, I mean, from China or Canada and Europe, yeah, they're in a different boat, right? But what Biden has said is inflation's in control. Why do we need to drop rates, right? And doing so this close to the election could cause some problems. England apparently is kind of in the boat where they're so screwed up right now, they don't care. They're just going to drop it because they got to figure out a way to kind of fix some things on their end. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I don't know what the right answer is, and this is a little over my head, to be honest with you, but it will be something intriguing to follow over the next month or two for sure.
Yeah. Well, Elizabeth Warren sent a strongly worded letter to the Fed motivating them to reduce rates. So it's not a, the Fed's not political, but you have political pressure in writing to, for them to change the rates. Like Elizabeth Warren has any influence, should have any control in that, right? Like she's, that's a conversation I think that she's supposed to have behind closed doors. I don't think that's one that you're supposed to send a letter on Senate letterhead.
Well, I feel like she wrote a letter to Biden to get him to veto the crypto bill that was on his desk not too long ago. So apparently she thinks she has more power than she does, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I want to see what happens with her election in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
I think that'll be even I can't remember the guy's name, John Deaton. If he makes a good run, that's very telling, because she has not had competition in a long time. So if he can just take, I mean, Massachusetts, right? So I guess maybe if he can take 20-25%, 30%, that'd be something substantial. It'd be worth noting. Yep.
Yeah. So let's talk about ETFs. We had some pretty positive news from a global ETF perspective. Last week, there was $2 billion of inflows into the Bitcoin spot ETFs, which if you look at that equals all of May combined. So, I mean, that's pretty exciting to see. I think $1 billion of that was BlackRock. Shocker, right? So they now have over 300,000 Bitcoin in their ETF. And if you think about what just happened, the amount of Bitcoin that was gobbled up by the ETFs last week is equivalent to 2 months of miners mining Bitcoin. So, I mean, the supply shock at some point is going to happen, because that is insane for 2 months of Bitcoin to be gone in a week.
Via a single channel, right? I mean, if there's buy pressure on spot markets and exchanges, then, you know, that's, you know, you're talking about a ton of Bitcoin being taken out. But I mean, you got a little bit of float. You know, we always talked about kind of what Bitcoin is available on exchanges and all that. But as that gets depleted, you know, a fraction of it is going into the hands of people like me and you that we're just buying, right? We're not interested in selling it at prices even close to this. So the more that comes off exchanges, a lot of that's just getting put into what I would say is like educated long-term Bitcoin investors. And some of those guys may be waiting all the way until they spend Bitcoin on goods and services, and which after my trip to El Salvador, I'm thinking it might be a little bit further off. It seems hard to do to become that medium of exchange, but the store of value is, I feel like it's pretty well established at this point. And I think it's just getting started from getting the mainstream adoption, the institutional adoption and all that. Is, you know, we're only 5-6 months into that. So I think you keep pulling those Bitcoin off exchanges, and the spot Bitcoin ETF guys have to buy actual Bitcoin and can't rehypothecate. And as long as they don't, and all the money that comes in to buy Bitcoin actually buys Bitcoin, before long the price is going up. There's no way around it.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about Ethereum ETFs as well, and those still haven't officially started trading, at least in the US. But we had two new Ethereum ETFs happen last week, which were leveraged ETFs based on derivatives and futures. So it's crazy that we continue to have those, but we still don't have a spot ETF in the US. and those, I think, they had about $5 million of trading volume. So it's kind of nothing compared to what the Bitcoin ETFs are or have been. And the perception among a lot of the people that think they know what they're talking about is that Ethereum ETFs might get maybe 10 or 20% of the total flow into Ethereum ETFs rather than Bitcoin ETFs. But time will tell whether or not that's true or not, because one of the big benefits for Ethereum ETFs was staking, and that is not being included in the US version, although Hong Kong expects to have it in their version by the end of the year. So, and they think for sure they're going to be ahead of the US from that perspective.
Yeah, the SEC not allowing the staking component to the Ethereum ETFs, to me, it's a real bummer for Ethereum folks, because they can craft a narrative around the Bitcoin ETF and kind of explain Bitcoin to people as a digital gold and scarce. And, you know, it's kind of an easier thing to explain without going into depth. Whereas Ethereum, I don't know that there's a real good way to explain Ethereum to people that aren't digital and don't have any interest in trying to understand it. You know, yeah, it's the kind of the platform which the Ethereum apps and layer twos are built on, but you don't care about those things if you have no idea what Ethereum is. So, you know, you're like, okay, you're stacking on other stuff that they don't know about onto the Ethereum network that you also don't know about. But if it's staking, that's like, hey, look, it's this tech thing. Forget about that. Once you buy it, it basically kicks out a dividend. We'll turn that into cash, right? We'll give that to you in US dollars. That would be a much easier sell to like a normal investor that's used to US dollar type investments.
To me, it's like owning the infrastructure for the internet is kind of the same way of describing what Ethereum is. If you wanted to go back in time and own the internet, this is the best way of describing how investing in Ethereum makes sense. So the other thing, there are other countries now that are doing their Bitcoin ETFs. Thailand just mentioned that they are planning on, or I think they have rolled it out. To me, it seems like their spot Bitcoin ETF is just buying a bunch of other spot Bitcoin ETFs, like buying 11 other ones instead of doing their own thing. But I don't know, I'm a little hazy on that, but it is, they have done it. I think they're only giving access to wealthy investors and accredited investors. So it is not, and everybody gets it yet in Thailand, but it's at least moving in the right direction.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit when the spot Bitcoin ETFs came out, that not only are people going to buy the spot Bitcoin ETFs, other ETFs are going to include those spot Bitcoin ETFs mm-hmm. in their ETFs. And so this to me is another one of those examples where it's just easier for people to get Bitcoin exposure and they don't have to go through the self-custody stuff or really understanding it. They just want to get a piece of the ride. And yeah, I mean, the same thing when Ethereum ETFs come out, you know, they're going to package like a Bitcoin and Ethereum and a NVIDIA and, you know, like a tech innovation ETF that's available and it'll continue to kind of suck up the float in Bitcoin that's out there. And so, yeah, I think if you are into Bitcoin now, you're in a pretty good spot because everybody else is starting to get into it. And my retired neighbors are stopping me on the street to talk about it.
Well, we talked about the Wisconsin pension fund getting into it not too long ago, and there's been a little bit more details that have come out. The total amount that they've gotten in puts it at like 0.1% of their entire portfolio. And their expectation is at least 1-2%, right? So they got a long ways to go. And like we've talked about this entire time is once you get to 1-2%, you're like, maybe we should do 5%. Maybe we should do 10%, right? So it just kind of keeps growing from there. And especially for them being one of the first movers, it's only going to look better and better. I mean, look how good El Salvador is looking these days from being one of the first movers from a country perspective.
Yeah, that's not only are you kind of in the 1% is a no-brainer. Like if it goes to zero, fine. The 99% of the rest of my portfolio will go up on average 7%. So 1 year I have 6%. Okay, fine. But then you start to learn more about it and everything else. And now 5% is okay. And then you hit a bull run and it takes up to 10% of your portfolio. And instead of rebalancing it, you're like, no, I'll just let this ride. Like, I don't need to sell Bitcoin. So I would expect the Wisconsin pension guys. I listened to a little bit more of a podcast that knew the kind of how those people think. So the Wisconsin pension is overfunded. Right. Like every pension fund in America is underfunded by a lot, like 50%, and they're overfunded. So they're like the most fiscally responsible pension fund out there. And if it were me, I would be looking at them to be like, okay, well, if they're in it and they do a lot of things right, we need to at least consider jumping in at some level. So yeah, to me, it's a good sign. And it's a pension, which once you start to kind of get the pension fixed income type of people understanding that a small allocation makes sense, then that opens up a pool of money that is really not accessible to Bitcoin at this point. And once you start taking little chunks, I mean, it's like the people that are really enthusiastic about this, that Bitcoin's going to be it's going to suck up all the monetary premium of all the assets in the world. And that's a bit much for me, but if you can start taking little pieces of each pool of money of real estate, of fixed income, you know, I mean, you know, the guys like me will sell a rental property and buy some Bitcoin with the proceeds. Like, that's pulling money out of the monetary premium of real estate. You got the Wisconsin pension fund, instead of buying bonds or some other, you know, fixed income type of investment, they're getting into Bitcoin. So these little pieces coming along in 2024, you know, by 2030, 2032, they got more people with bigger pieces, and then price has to go up.
Yeah. The other thing that's kind of going on, we've talked a little bit about it in the past, was Nigeria holding one of the Binance execs in custody, and it's been 3 months now, and I think he has malaria, and they're holding him in like the worst jail in Nigeria. By the way, he's also a U.S. citizen, used to work for the federal government. So now you just had over 100 federal prosecutors write a letter to the Secretary of State, Blinken, saying that you got to get him back. Like, this is ridiculous. You have 16 senators that have gone to Biden and said, we got to figure out a way to get this back, because there's no reason he should be held for something that the company has done. He doesn't have any decision-making power to do any of this. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens with this, because it's now almost at Biden's feet, and he's going to have to do something about it, or else it's probably going to take away a lot of the attention here coming up to an election for him.
Well, bad news for that guy. If it's at Biden's feet, I don't know that he can bend over and pick it up. Somebody needs to just straight up put it in his hands. But no, man, we've talked about this for weeks, man. This guy's been kind of like a political hostage, but it's not political. It's like a financial hostage. For, it's got to be over a month. And yeah,
man, three months.
3 months. So yeah, you can't do this to people. So yeah, I mean, I don't know that we've talked about him being a U.S. citizen. That's news. So
I guess I didn't really pay attention to that until recently. And his wife has come out and said, this is ridiculous. I expect a lot more out of the United States to allow other countries to treat their citizens this way. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that I think the U.S. can do to take away some of the money that they're sending to Nigeria for the anti-money laundering proceeds that they get. So I don't know. I mean, this is crazy that it's gone so long and that really nothing's happened.
Yeah, I mean, we had a women's basketball player in Russia while Russia's at war with the Ukraine. And we got her back, and she had a drug charge that was actually her fault and her own actions. Like, this guy's being held for ransom so that they can get responses from the company he works for. So yeah, I think you got to get him out, and then you just deal with, Nigeria can deal with Binance like adults.
Yeah. So switching subjects kind of back to Bitcoin, and we've talked a lot about how Michael Saylor and MicroStrategy have been rewriting the game on acquiring Bitcoin. We talked last week about Summer Scientific, and they were a medical device company that was going to buy $40 million of Bitcoin. Well, they bought the $40 million. They bought another $17 million last week, and now they're raising $150 million to buy more.
You do a little bit, man, and then you want more. It happened to me. Happened to you. Like, it's going to happen. It happened to Saylor. It happens to everybody, man. It's like, oh, the more you figure this stuff out, and we're like, yeah, this is a real valuable thing, and I want more of it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the medical devices are going to be a hobby on the side, and they're really going to be a somewhat de facto Bitcoin ETF here pretty soon.
Yeah, like we got to pay the interest payments on the loans we got to buy the Bitcoin, guys. You need to go out and sell more medical devices. We don't want to sell the Bitcoin.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the L2s, and both for Bitcoin and Ethereum, just because I think there's some really interesting things going on and possibly some big news. I mean, of course, Coinbase is always up there. Base, which is their L2 on top of Ethereum, is by far the leading income stream for L2s. I mean, and it's probably more than 4x what Blast is and what Optimum is. So I mean, they're light years ahead. That being said, Friend.tech is it, which was one of the reasons that Base got a lot of attention, is moving to their own chain off of the Base chain, because I don't know if it was too expensive or what the reason, but it kind of is surprising a lot of people. I don't know if anybody even cares about that, but it is kind of interesting to see just everything going on with the L2s. And now you're starting to see a lot more interest from L2s on Bitcoin as well. So Starkware, which is the guy that's pretty much developed ZK technology for Ethereum, is now talking about moving through with this concept and putting on Bitcoin, right? Which is a huge deal. They said it wasn't ready for it in the past, but now with the Taproot upgrade, they are now ready for it. And this could scale Bitcoin into a lot more transactions per second than what they have now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and where things go, but that could be some pretty big news. And shoot, I've been saying ZK technology is going to be that theme that over the next 5 years is going to change everything.
Yeah, I mean, not to go back to El Salvador again, but I mean, I did one transaction at a hotel that was on chain, and I did a bunch of transactions that were on Lightning, which is pretty much an L2. I mean, I guess it is an L2. It's just not like, it doesn't have its own token like what you would think for like Ethereum L2s, but it's got its own network and its own style of using Bitcoin to transfer money around. And the L2 experience was phenomenal. And the base layer on-chain transaction was clunky. You know, it cost $5 for the transaction. She had to take a picture of my phone because I wasn't going to wait around for 10 or 20 minutes for it to confirm. And so, yeah, I mean, we talk about it a lot. When you need mass adoption, it's got to be easy to use. When it's got to be easy to use, you can't use Bitcoin on the main chain. And so you got to figure out layer twos to make it easier but safe. You got to make it faster. But it's got to tie back to the Bitcoin, the bedrock of Bitcoin, so that people know what they've got. And I mean, using Strike, they've got it set up now. I don't know when they did it, where you have one wallet and you can send to Lightning wallets or you can send to on-chain Bitcoin wallets. So it is much easier to use. You don't have to like worry about, oh, is that Lightning? Is that wallet address a Lightning address or is it an on-chain, like a BC1 address? So the more they figure these things out, the easier it is. And the more people use it, the more they're going to realize, oh, this, I just bought dinner with Bitcoin that the same people that have lied to me about the other news have been telling me is magic internet money that's fake and it's going to go to zero. So once you start using it, it really connects the dots for you. As far as when someone values something that you also value, you can trade it for other things. And so the layer twos and bringing different innovation onto Bitcoin, to me is the timing is probably right. Like we're definitely firming up the store of value. A lot of people understand that Bitcoin is valuable. So once you get that, then you can start to build on ways to transfer that value from person to person.
So I think the Lightning network has been great. There's a lot of people that are saying there's some issues with it and they're trying to find some other solutions. Arc Labs is one of those. They're planning on using the Arc protocol that got approved, I think, last year to build another layer two on top of Bitcoin as well. And the big benefit for them is it would allow it to be somewhat self-custodial, which is with right now the Lightning network needs a lot of nodes and you have to open up all these channels. And I'll be honest, it's a little over my head, but this theoretically is going to solve some of that. So kind of what you're just saying, we're bringing innovation on chain. It can't hurt, right? I mean, it's interesting. Well, let's see what happens. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, it's not going to change what happens on the Bitcoin network. This is just building on top of it and seeing what else can be done.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can use Bitcoin. You don't just have to buy it and hold it.
Yeah. And then Spider Chain's actually, they're kind of interesting. They are planning on putting proof of stake on top of Bitcoin's proof of work network, which is really interesting. So it's using Ethereum's EVM, their virtual module, whatever you call that, right? And it would allow pretty much a hybrid model of the benefits of both proof of work and proof of stake. They've already, I think, have like 10,000 nodes running, and they've tested over 1 million transactions in their testnet. So once again, it's kind of interesting to see what can be built. And then if you can take kind of the benefits of both of them and put them on the same chain, then that will be intriguing to see too.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like getting yield for letting someone hold your Bitcoin, and that has not worked out well in the past. I would need to learn more about that before I decided anything.
Yeah, well, the way to understand it, and it's still there's the details are still a little fuzzy, is that it would almost choose people to be the validators from a proof of stake perspective, but they're putting it on the proof of work network for Bitcoin, so it could make things a little bit easier than the way things are done with some of the nodes today, the Lightning Network nodes. But I don't know, it'll be interesting to see. Coinbase is also, I mean, they've been in the news a lot. They are releasing their smart wallet, which is the plan is to have it eliminate kind of some of the major issues that you have, which for most people is that complex onboarding, right? Is having 12, 24 word phrases and trying to keep that organized. So this will allow them to be able to do like Apple Play or whatever the Apple ID is, and then Google your Chrome, Google account. Like there'll be much easier ways to handle this. And then they'll also have ways to do like zero fee transactions as well. So, I mean, I don't know if you've had that problem where you don't have the right gas token in your wallet to be able to make any transactions. So this will give people an option to do that and just make it easier to put money in or make transactions one way or the other.
Yeah, no, I probably, what was that, maybe 4 months ago, I had like some garbage token or something. I wanted to buy some other garbage token with it for like 100 or $200. Moved it over, like it was available on Coinbase wallet, and but I didn't have the gas token, and I'm like, okay, I just lost $200. I'm like, I'll figure this out later, and I probably won't.
Yeah, and I think Coinbase is even partnering with somebody to give you like real-time notifications on if things change to, because especially if you're in a lot of tokens, it's hard to keep track of everything. So this will allow you to kind of set alerts and get notified when something goes up 300% in a day.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Telegram. I mean, we've talked about their network, which is not officially their network, but the open network, the Ton coin. And they just launched what they're calling Telegram Stars, which is an in mini app payment system in Telegram. So you can transfer your stars over to, I guess, crypto or dollars, something like that. The interesting piece of this is it is compliant with both Apple and Google's Play rules, right? So, shocker, Apple and Google are taking like 30% cuts. But what Telegram says is, they'll give you that credit back in terms of advertising back in Telegram. So if you're using it to advertise to people there, then you're not losing any money from that perspective. But it's still kind of interesting that it is giving an option to pretty much have a payment cryptocurrency inside of the Telegram app.
Yeah, I mean, I've used like the Nostr zapping to zap sats around based on, people you like or people saying stuff that's good or whatever. It's having that in-app value transfer piece is pretty neat. So, yeah, if Telegram can figure out a way to do it where they don't get kicked out of the app stores, then other people, I bet, will follow suit.
Yeah. So Polygon just announced they're acquiring another ZK company, zero knowledge company. So this is their third one in 3 years. So, like I said, I think ZK is going to be a huge theme moving forward. And that's, I mean, Polygon is definitely one of the leaders in that space, and they're getting a third company. So this is impressive to see that happening.
Don't have much to say on that one.
So Solana was also in the news for, I guess, good and bad reasons. They had some validators that were doing sandwich attacks, pretty much putting in other transactions to take a little bit of extra profit from people trying to submit things to the network. They kicked a lot of those validators out, which is good to hear. I mean, finally, you hear some positive news about Solana. And then the other thing that was really interesting is their Phantom app. We talked about Phantom overtaking Meta not too long ago. Right now, the Phantom app is higher ranked than the Coinbase app. which is kind of crazy to me. So Coinbase has more active users, about 8 million a month versus Phantom 7 million. But you are seeing just the Phantom app kind of just taking off here lately and surpassing almost everybody. I think they're like, they were number two app in the Play Store for a little while, right? So this is called meme coin season. Everybody's interested in getting involved in Solana. And I mean, shoot, Solana had three times the number of tokens created than Ethereum did last month. And most of those are meme coins, right? But it's just, it's crazy to see the activity that Solana is gathering now lately.
Yeah. And it's crazy to hear all of this, and especially like the, you know, the top five ranking on app downloads and user active users and all that, because I just don't, aside from my normal channels that I get Bitcoin information from, I just don't feel it from like mainstream media and news and things like that. Like, yeah, my one neighbor's asking me about El Salvador because, you know, people ask us, why did we even go to El Salvador? And I'm like, well, it got on my radar because of Bitcoin. And so that way, you know, it kind of opens the door to have that conversation. But I mean, I don't feel like we're in a red hot bull run or like a screaming alt season. You know, it just feels like, it feels pretty bland.
Well, and we're not. If you look at the last 3 months, it's been down.
Exactly.
You probably don't have been looking at them, and it's not good, right? But I do think we are starting to be in a bull market for sure. I mean, the bull markets don't go up always to the right, but this has definitely been a time that altcoins haven't been great. And altcoins usually do great after Bitcoin cools down, right? So I think Bitcoin still has a long ways to run, but it's just intriguing to see how much is happening, especially in the meme coin space. I mean, you could argue that NFTs were a big driver on the last bull run. Meme coins seem to be a huge driver this bull run, or at least causing a lot of interest and in getting people involved.
Yeah, I mean, like the fear and greed index has been in greed for months.
Yeah,
it just doesn't feel like it. The price, it feels like we're just bouncing up and down in a range, and you know, 60 feels low and 74 feels high, and you know, we've kind of been like that since January or February. So, but yeah, it doesn't feel like we're, crypto apps should be the number two downloaded app in the Play Store. Like, it doesn't, I don't have that feeling, but it's good to see that it is. I'll take some quiet enthusiasm over loud enthusiasm.
Yeah. Well, some kind of negative news, CoinGecko, which, I mean, they're one of the two main guys that most people go, either CoinGecko or CoinMarketCap, to understand what's happening in the markets. They just got hacked. They lost, I think, 2 million users, names, emails, IP addresses, which is never good for any company to have happen, but it's becoming the norm these days. So you should be using a VPN. You should have different email passwords or accounts and passwords for all your accounts, right? I think they had about 23,000 emails go out to some of the customers that were phishing emails. I don't know of anything that's really happened to any of that yet, but or to any of the users yet, but it's just, be careful. Bad things still happen. Make sure you're protecting yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I was getting a phone call or two every day from scammers. Like, somehow or another, my information got out and somebody bought it on a database, and they were pounding away to get me to confirm that I had a Gmail address and a Coinbase account. And I'm like, some people are going to fall for this. So yeah, there is a monetary benefit to hacking websites and crypto exchanges and things like that. Even if you can't get to the actual tokens, getting to the individuals and then convincing them to give you passwords or seed phrases, you know, you got to go after each one instead of going after the big honeypot. But if everybody gives you $10,000 and you can get one or two of those a week, that's, you know, for those shady individuals, that's decent money.
Until you get caught.
Yep.
So the other big thing, I mean, there's some gaming stuff going on that's pretty cool too. MetaMask, which most people should be familiar with if you're using Ethereum, is kind of the main wallet out there for Ethereum, just announced that they are partnering with Hyperplay to where you can launch Web3 games directly from the MetaMask portal, which is kind of cool, right? So I'm excited to see what that turns into and how that works, but that will be really cool. And then Arbitrum, which is another large L2 on Ethereum, just announced a $225 million fund that will be spent to increase gaming over the next 3 years. No, there is some issues there. They added another 25 million last minute. So there's a bunch of people that want a revote that they think it's not ideal. A lot of people switch last minute, but I mean, it's still showing 225 million. It's probably the largest gaming fund that anybody has done so far. So gaming is still one of those focuses for a lot of people and will be a big driver, I think, moving forward too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see why gaming decreases over time. That industry seems to be only going in one direction since 8-bit Nintendo.
I don't know if you saw that they're releasing a new Nintendo, like diamond encrusted and all kinds of stuff on it. Like I don't, there's probably not a lot of people that are listening to this podcast that even know what a Game Boy is. And it is like it is the Game Boy reinvented with a couple of new games. And it was kind of funny to see.
Oh man. I mean, my son like spent $20 on a skin or something in game on Fortnite within the last few weeks. And I told him, I'm like, look, man, this is your money, but this is real dumb. Like you get nothing out of this. So there's money to be made out there.
Yeah. So kind of talking a little bit about NFTs, because this is kind of using NFT technology. SignPass, which is kind of the first on-chain verifiable ID system that is compatible with the existing passport systems, has now partnered officially with the first country at Sierra Leone over in Africa. So this, I mean, ideally is probably targeted more towards digital nomads, but it gives them the ability to have a digital access to get in and out of countries. And I think this for Sierra Leone gives them access to come live and work there as much as they want, and a path to actual citizenship as well. So I'd love to see this become more of a common thing for other countries to use. Granted, a country in Africa, I don't know how many people are going to be going to that anytime soon, but it is kind of, I mean, getting your foot in the door somewhere has to happen. And like we've talked about, Africa is probably going to be a hotbed for a lot of this stuff moving forward, just because the infrastructure isn't there like it is in a lot of other countries. So they can prove it out there and then let it expand depending on the demand.
Yeah. I mean, if you start to kind of get countries more flexible about citizenship and working in country and that sort of thing. I mean, I flew to El Salvador in less time than it takes me to fly to California or Seattle. So, you know, there's real benefits to other countries to doing that.
Yeah. And then the last big thing that I had was one of the football clubs over in England, Watford FC, is planning to sell 10% of their equity in a digital token. And owning, of course, the digital token will give you, I think, other benefits, but they are the league lower than the top. So if they get back to the higher league, I mean, it's like a couple $100 million of additional revenue type thing, right? So, but it'll just give more people access to be true owners in that. I think this is going to raise about $17.5 million, you know, from the sale of this, which is kind of cool to see, right? I mean, I think if you could own an NBA franchise or NFL franchise or something like that and be considered an owner, that would be a cool thing to be able to do. And this is probably the first time that someone can actually do this. That I think you have to buy 4 shares at what, $17 a share, whatever it is, right, to be an owner. But I mean, that'd be cool to say.
I mean, you're talking to a guy that is a part owner of the Atlanta Braves. So there's definitely a reason to think that there would be fans that would like to get a piece of that. I mean, Green Bay Packers, that's how they can make their whole system work, is the fans are part owners. So if you can divide that equity up into tiny little fractions that people can afford, then yeah, I say that's probably a smart use of it.
Well, that's all I had. I know that was a ton of information that we just talked about, but it's an exciting time right now. And I mean, this all happened in less than a week. So
yeah,
I wonder what next week is going to be like.
No kidding. I mean, it's, you know, the summer is supposed to be like calm and chill and nothing really happens. And then October timeframe, you know, we should get some fireworks, but I feel like there's a lot going on right now in crypto and Bitcoin, but it still doesn't seem to make it on the news. I mean, this time last year, it was very quiet. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in the next few months.
Yeah, and I feel there's probably still a ton of things that I'm not touching on, right? Or we're not touching on, but I mean, this is, it's exciting to see the direction that we're going, and hopefully it'll be a fun ride over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Hal, welcome back to the States, and looking forward to chatting again next week.
Appreciate it, man.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.